I noticed we have some more seats this week, Joe, right? You see? As soon as you mention yeast in AA meeting, it's always a bad thing the next week. Nobody wants to hear about yeast on step four. And we're in the step four, which is kind of like, there's not that much sex appeal in step four, as you know. So we'll try to make this as sexy as possible. And hopefully we'll get them to come back next week. Well, last week we took the steps out of the box. And what I mean by that is we spoke about that as we go through life and as we stay sober longer and as we start to work the steps become an integral part of our lives. It's not where we harm someone and then we automatically say, well, I have to do a step 10. Or it's not where we do something that needs to be shared with another person and then we automatically say it's a step four. Hopefully it's going to become part of our lives where they just interchange and we have a higher working set of principles and a set of directions in our own lives where we just say, you know what, I have to do something about it. A good friend of myself that's here tonight, we had a disagreement this week. And the disagreement was I thought I was right and he didn't. So that being said, we had some choice words for each other, but I didn't actually think that when we spoke again that I was actually doing a step 10. I just knew that I needed to promptly just take care of my side of the street, and he knew the same intuitively. But when it comes to step four, it's a little bit different. Now, I had the most amazing notes prepared. I did a lot of homework on this. However, that book does not seem to be with me tonight. So, I do want to tell you that we are going to talk about pagels, pride, anger, gluttony, greed, envy, lust, and sloth, the seven deadly sins. We are going to talk about on page 12 of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, where Bill W. says that we need to have our sins removed from us, root and branch. But then in the 12 and 12, did I say the big book or the 12 and 12? That's in the big book. But then in the 12 and 12, when it comes to step four, it says to us in step four in the 12 and 12 that we're not going to like that word sins. Some of us are going to bristle with antagonism as soon as you say the word sins. We're gonna get nervous about that. We don't like to hear those type of words because some of us were forced into go to church when we were younger. Some of us have watched televangelists on TV. While we were up doing things we shouldn't do and they were talking about sins, whatever the reason is, we just don't like that word. We like defects. We like defects of character. Some of us like to keep our defects. But we certainly don't want to hear that our sins need to be removed from us root and branch. But I'm going to go to the big book. I don't want you to take my word for it. On page 12, it starts off, thus I was convinced that God is concerned with us humans when we want him enough. As long as I saw, I felt, I believed, scales of prejudice and pride fell from my eyes. A whole new world came into view. If you're not a Bible person, none of that would mean that I came from the Bible, but an entire paragraph just came from the Bible. Which is nice. In the big book, they sneak it in so everyone doesn't run out at the same time. The real significance of my experience at the cathedral burst upon me. For a brief moment, I had needed and wanted God. There, I had had a humble willingness to have him with me, and he came. But soon the sense of his presence, had been blotted out by worldly clamors. Right there, we've already talked about step two and three right there. We asked God to come into us, and he came. Much more than just making a decision where three frogs are on a log. One of them makes a decision, how many are still there, and all three of them. You only make it a decision. Making a decision to have God be the ruler and author of our lives is a lot more than just making a decision to just make a decision to do the rest of the steps, in my opinion. I used the word humble opinion a couple weeks ago, and everyone laughed, so now I'm just saying in my opinion. In my opinion, it's a lot more than just saying, I'm making a decision to turn my life and my will over to the care of God, and all that means is that I'm willing to do the rest of the steps. I don't see that in our literature. I see that that's where that's taught in AA meetings, and that's what's shared. I just don't see that in our literature. I see that right there, right then, we make a decision today, on the 20th of March, 2012, to have God be the ruler of our lives. And how do I follow up on that? I go to page 86, 87, and 88 in the big book, which talks about upon awakening. Upon awakening. It gives us a perfect set of directions for people like us that don't want directions. We don't want directions, but this one says upon awakening. Let us think about the rest of our day. Turn it over to God. He's our director. We're going to get our strength from Him. Page 86, 87, and 88. And as Jerry pointed out last week, it's more on page 87, but you got to start on page 86 to get to 87. So here we are. Bill W. is talking about this spirit of this universe, this God, this Father of light coming upon him, asking him to come into his life. And what happens? What's the next line? He says, he comes. The big book says that God does not make hard terms for those that seek him. The Bible says, seek and you will find. It's the same sentence. Seek and you will find. God is not, if you ask God to come into your life, he doesn't say, well, what denomination are you? Are you coming to me from AA or NA? Are you Methodist or Baptist? You Jewish or Muslim? I'm not sure if I'm going to come upon you. God does not make hard terms for those that seek him. And then people say, as your understanding. That, of course, it's your own understanding. People are consistently saying, as your own understanding. Of course, it's your own understanding. You can't ask God of my understanding. It's not your God. Your conception of God is your conception of God. I can tell you what my conception of God is. I can tell you that in the big book it says that we are quick to see where religious people are right. I can tell you that where it says that many of us do belong to religious denominations. I can tell you that in the step three it says many of us do visit to a priest, a rabbi, or a minister. I can share that with you, but unless that's your personal experience, it's going to sound like wah, 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 wah. When life gets hard enough for you, and the things that you're doing don't work, and no one else is around you, what does my son suck on? It's a pacifier. When your pacifiers are not there, and food, and I don't want to use the word, but I'm going to say food and sex and everything else that you're trying doesn't work, and the God-sized hole that you're in AA with still is there, and you say to yourself, but I haven't drank in 12 years. Why do I still have a God-sized hole? You're going to finally realize it can only be filled with what? God. And when you go to fill it with God and that works, you've now taken a step three. Now, does that mean you're ready to go on to the next part of the steps? Of course it does, because in the big book says, at once we set a course, vigorous action. But it's not all it means. That's what I'm trying to say to you. Taking a step three doesn't mean that you're ready to do the rest of the steps. That's one of the wonderful things that are going to happen. But that's just, it's like saying in Alcoholics Anonymous, our main goal is to stay sober. Alcoholics Anonymous, our main goal is not to stay sober. There's nowhere in the literature that it says. In our 12 step, what does it say? Having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we try to carry this message to alcoholics, to other alcoholics, right? That is one of our main purposes, right? So it's not only for us to stay sober. Staying sober is an amazing byproduct of the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. If you don't stay sober, you're not searching for God, you're not reading the big book, you're certainly not helping other people. But many of us get stuck in, I'm staying sober. Well, at least I'm staying sober. And the program is full of people that are at least staying sober. That's not the program that I would ever stay in. I'm not in the at least I'm staying sober program. I tried that. It lasted 7 years, and I used to say, well, at least I'm staying sober. People say, but you're not really acting like, I thought you were in AA. Isn't there principles? And I'm like, at least I'm staying sober. And they're like, but weren't you at Tootsie's last Tuesday night? I mean, I said, yeah, but at least I'm staying sober. And I used, at least I'm staying sober, as the yardstick of my serenity and my sanity. I can't tell you how far apart those things are sometimes. I know a man, and I'm not going to mention his name, of course. He's 20-something years in the program. Jason knows him. And he spends his time wanting to share the 13th step with newcomers at the 12-step house. And so, 20-something years sober. You would think that the man at 27 years sober would have moved on from that. There's several different programs going on. There's the program of Alcoholics Anonymous that comes out of the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And then there's the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. And the fellowship, brothers and sisters, can be interpreted in many different ways. The fellowship can be interpreted in many different ways. Okay, so that's my take on that. So we go back to this on page 13. Worldly clamors blotted out his new feeling of God. And I don't know if anyone can relate to that in here. You have this amazing epiphany. God comes upon you, usually in a place where you're in utter desperation, and that could mean in sobriety. Paul E., a well-known person in Alcoholics Anonymous down here, in Narcotics Anonymous, went into treatment when he was 8 years sober, not because he was using, because he was in such horrible emotional pain, he needed to check himself into a treatment center to keep from doing harm to himself, or whatever reason he had. He was in horrible emotional pain. We can become in horrible emotional pain at any time in our sobriety. Drinking and drugging for most of us is just a symptom. Just a symptom. When I took drinking and drugs out of my system, I still had all the same pains that I had before drinking and drugging. I used to think, because I came in when I was young, I came in when I was 22, as I told you, and I stayed sober till I was 31, I used to think that all my problems stemmed from drinking and drugging. And I thought everything was going to exponentially, and when I say exponentially, I'm not using that to brag. I'm saying I thought that everything was going to get better each year. I thought year one would be a little bit tough, year two would be better, three better, four better, five better. It doesn't work like that. I want you to hear this, just in case that you're in those years or you're at 12 years and you're wondering why you still have huge emotional pain. The entire program is designed for us to have a spiritual experience, what changes us from the inside. When Roland Hazard went and spent time with Carl Jung and figured out the inner workings of his mind, and, you know, just to give you an understanding of who Carl Jung was, if you don't know, I'm sure probably most of the people in here do know, but he was the psychologist of the era. He was like Carl Jung and Freud. I mean, he was gigantic. And it wasn't like everyone was going to meet with him. You'd have to travel to Europe, which was not easy, pay gazillions of dollars to stay with him for an entire year. And after that entire year, what does the next line in the big book said? And he drank again. And he drank again. So figuring out the inner workings of his mind, he drank again. A lot of us in Alcoholics Anonymous are on this path of staying sober, and at the same time, we're going in another direction of our serenity. And something will have to give. Some of us drink again. Some of us blow our brains out. Some of us get into such emotional pain that we eventually get on our knees and we say to the God of our understanding right there, please, I need help. And we finally take a thorough third step. When no one else is around, not because our sponsor says we have to, because we need to. And when that happens, then all the miracles can happen after that. And last week, as we spoke about, it says that if we stayed close to God and we performed his work well, all sorts of miraculous things followed. And I shared some of the miraculous things that have happened to me in the last couple years. The adoption agency said that we would never be able to adopt because of my past record and the person that I was. He said a person like you will never be able to adopt. My son walked last week, I told you. He's 10 months. He walked for the first time last Tuesday night. It was unbelievable. Saturday night, we were at a meeting with Steve and Nina at the ninth chapter, which is for the family afterwards. In the big book, there's a chapter called the Night Chapter. And Joshua Eddie stood up in the meeting and started walking across the floor. I mean, and screaming at the same time. It was unbelievable. You know, he was so excited. All sorts of remarkable things followed if we stayed close to him and performed his work well. And I'm sure if I went up to not every single person, but I'm sure if I went and I asked how many miraculous things are going on in your life, a lot of you guys would be like, you know, two hands. You want to share immediately because amazing things are going on in your life. And I pray that that's because of what you're doing in the third step. But immediately in the next paragraph or the next sentence, it says it's immediately followed by rigorous action. And we were going to talk tonight extensively about yeast. And I had downloaded some amazing facts about yeast. And I told you that I promised you that we were going to talk about something that you never heard in the fourth step, probably of any AA meeting, and that was about yeast. And I'm not sure if God wanted me not to speak about yeast tonight, but that book is not with me. But let me tell you a little bit of the research that I found. In Jewish tradition, during Passover, which is coming up in the next couple weeks, and this has nothing to do about being Jewish or anything like that, it's just about tradition. It's a tradition to have all yeast removed from the house, the product yeast that makes bread rise, leavened bread. And it's a tradition that you would have all yeast removed from the house. And they go through this ritual cleaning, people that are religious Jews, they go through this. It did get warm in here, right? It's like the AC shut off. The moment I talk about yeast, every time this happened, it's like I'm being punished. My books are being stolen and the air conditioning is being turned off. But we're going to punch through this. I don't care. We're going to get through the yeast chapter and we're going on. I've been on step four for 4 weeks now. We're moving on. And in the Jewish tradition, before Passover happens, you're supposed to have no yeast products in the house. But here's the deal. A lot of us don't know what yeast products are. I mean, if I said to you, Joe, what are the yeast products in your house? There was a gentleman that shared last week about alcohol. Of course, as alcoholics, we know that yeast produces alcohol. But it's in the fermentation process. But if I said to you, Jerry, what are the yeast products that you have in your house? You'd probably come up with bread, but you might not come up with any of the other stuff. But the people that are searching for yeast in the house, they have a list of what's acceptable and what's not acceptable. They have a list of what they're searching for and what's allowed in the house. And they do this systematic searching in their house for this yeast product to have it removed before Passover. That's what the fourth step is all about. It's a searching and fearless moral inventory. And I had looked up the word moral, and I had all this stuff prepared. But let me tell you what I remember about moral. It's the idea of knowing right from wrong, good from bad. Now, if you're anything like me, that has been skewed for so long that my moral envelope is what, Steve? Huge. My moral envelope is a satchel when I came in here. I thought that anything goes as long as I didn't drink and drug. I thought that I could do harm, not to others, but certainly I could do harm that maybe wouldn't harm. You know, I could do some quiet harm is what I'm trying to say. I certainly felt that if it wasn't gigantically harmful, it was okay as long as I didn't drink and drug. And I want to tell you, that might sound strange to you, but that is a very popular idea in AA. Very popular idea. People can come up here, axe murderers, at 22 years of sobriety, and we'll still give them a chip and cheer for them, tell them they're fantastic. Meanwhile, they got dead bodies in the car in the parking lot. So it does not mean that people have a high moral fiber because they have years of sobriety. Now, understand something. One of my closest friends is sitting right here, has 20-something years of sobriety. I'm not putting down time. Time is amazing, but it's not a yardstick for your moral envelope. What is a yardstick for your moral envelope is when we sit together after the AA meeting and we go out and we sit in a public restaurant, and the way that you talk in AA is the way that you talk in the restaurant. I had a friend over last night, very successful. I have two close friends that I grew up in high school. One of them is a famous lawyer, and he's a Fortune 500 lawyer, one of the guys that's on the firm, one of those things. These are the guys I grew up with. And another guy that came over my house last night that owns, you know, several dozen apartment buildings and different things. And I work at the flea market. You know what I'm saying? So I could start feeling, you know, a little bit low self-esteem. I could start, here's my one friend. You know, people, they do write-ups about him in the paper. Here's my other friend, owns half of Fort Lauderdale and a piece of Manhattan. And I work in the flea market. However, my moral envelope, where I sit in my life, I would not trade any of it for another person's moral envelope. Where it says that we made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves, I've done that and I continue to do that. When we left the house last night, he spoke one way in front of my wife and another way in the parking lot. Two different people. How are you speaking when you leave an AA meeting? How are you speaking when you're not in front of your wife and your husband? How are you speaking at the water cooler at work? How are you speaking in the emails and the Facebooks? Is your life an open book? If you walk outside here, do you have to check things? Do you have to delete stuff from the computer when you leave the house? All these things are indication of where you're at in your moral step with God. Now, how do we know these things are moral or immoral? Because most of us are not. And the big book says that one person's sexual conduct is going to seem extreme to another. It's going to seem ideal to another. It even goes on to say some people believe in a straight pepper diet, while other people believe in another type of diet. So I'm not the arbitrator of anybody's sexual conduct. But what I can tell you is that you can come into my house right now and search through my house, and there's nothing that I have to delete or be embarrassed of. And that was not the case most of my sobriety, certainly not the last time around. And in my four step, when I had these lists and my sponsor said, we're going to talk about resentments, fears, sex conduct, and harms to others, I said, no problem. I've done 50 or 60 of these four steps. I did them in the treatment center 2 times. Four step is nothing. I do it in a couple seconds. First of all, I don't resent anybody. My life is an open book. I was very, very cavalier. And he said, really? You don't have any resentments? And he just sitting with me for 10 minutes. We came up with a resentment list. And I'm like, you're right. I do resent. Yeah, you're absolutely. Exactly right. And he started going through institutions. Just on the surface, I had 2 pages of resentments. That's not even talking about any of the stuff that my parents that I had with my sister, my siblings, people in AA, my sponsors, none of that stuff. Once I started going through those lists, I realized not only did I have resentments, I had a lot of resentments. I had resentments real and imagined. Let me tell you what that means. I had resentments over what I thought you thought of me. I was in the car with my friend Frank this morning. We went to a meeting at 9 o'clock in the morning. And one of my employees called. And she said to me, I called her and I said to her, can I buy you breakfast? And she said to me, well, I can't eat this morning, and I'm very excited to show you why. Now, she had been talking to me about putting rings in her face for a year, okay? And she's always talking about when a person comes in with big rings in their face and these gigantic hoop earrings, she's always like, isn't that awesome? You know, I'm from a different school. We tried to keep stuff out of our face in my era. You know what I'm saying? So we put lotions on to keep the stuff away from our face. So here I am with Frank, and we're at breakfast this morning. And I said, Frank, I'm going to start praying now, because once I walk into my place of business, and I don't want to seem disappointed, because she's a young lady, and I want to support her, and I want to not seem disappointed. So she told me, I can't have breakfast, because I have something to show you, and I'm just visiting. How bad could this be that she can't even eat breakfast? I mean, this is going to be gigantic. And I share it with Frank, and I share it with another guy named Mike, and I'm praying in the car. I'm like, God, don't give me the face that people know from the outside that I'm disappointed. And so I'm walking in, and I'm just praying the whole way in, and I'm like, just be happy and cheers and do it. And it turns out that she had her braces removed, and she was all excited to show me. When I want to tell you that I have resentments and fears that are real or imagined, that is just a microcosm of what goes on inside this head. I had already created a scenario where we're going to have to sit down with her and talk to her about these things, and all she wanted to do was smile. So, resentments, fears, sex conduct, harms cause others. In all of these things, we're looking into our defects of character, or our pagels, which is our sins, or our 7 deadly sins. And once again, it's pride, anger, gluttony, greed, envy, lust, and sloth. And of course, sloth is last because it's lazy, and so it's always the last one. So we put all this stuff down in categories, but why do we have to categorize it? We're not going to know what yeast is good and bad. We're not going to know what needs to be removed. Now, this is where, let me just give you a little sidebar here. I'm not totally sold out on everything. This is gonna shock you, okay? And my friends that have been with me a while in the different series, they already know what I'm going to say. I'm not totally sold out for everything in the 12 and 12, okay? I know that that's heresy. You can't throw me out, but I'm just saying. I like the 12 and 12. I think the 12 and 12 is awesome. It was written 15 years after people were in AA. I just don't feel it's inspired as the big book is. The first 164 pages to me looks like it was breathed by God. It's inspired. I wouldn't change it. Of course, I wouldn't change anything. But I believe everything it says on the first 164 pages. The 12 and 12 is an amazing manual along with the big book. However, when it comes to the fourth step, I love the 12 and 12. So if you're in here and you're saying, well, I can't do the fourth step. It's confusing to me. I'm on page 64 of the big book. There's only four columns. One of them's Mr. Jones. Another one's Mr. Brown. They slept with his wife. I don't understand it. That's nonsense. If you were there from 1939 to 1952, I would say, you know what? You might have a point. But since they came out with the 12 and 12, there is nobody in here that should not have been writing the four step. And don't make a big deal out of it. Find the yeast. Search for it. If you don't know which yeast is good and bad because you don't know what your moral compass is, then find out what it is by getting these lists. And most of you have the internet. Most of you spend a lot of time in Facebook. There's Facebook four-step pages. I mean, it's all over the thing. It's a four-step inventory guide. And all it does is show you the columns of fears, sex. That's for Steve. They do have that. Sex conduct, fears, harms caused others, and what's the big one? Resentments. Because the big book says that resentment is what? The number one offender. And when it says it's the number one offender, guess what? It's a pretty big deal. It's a pretty big deal. So resentments, they got to go. Nick, got to go. Okay? Got to go. When resentments are piling up, you got to let them go. Frank and I were at a meeting this morning where the whole topic was about resentments. And let me just share a little something about resentments. There's a thing going around in AA that says if you resent somebody, you pray for them for a certain amount of time, and then poof, like a magic genie, the resentment fairy comes into your life and just poofs it away. It's about 2.5 weeks. That's the going rate right now. 2.5 weeks. No matter what the person's done to you, no matter what they've done, chopped up your family in little pieces, 2.5 weeks, you will have no more resentments against that person. Let me share this with you. You pray for the person for as long as it takes. Some people have had some horrible things happen to them. Some of us in here have done those horrible things. It takes as long as it takes. This is God's timing, not ours. I was once on a vacation with a gentleman by the name of Ed Mutum. I can use his last name because he's passed away since in the last 4 years. He was a giant of a man. And in AA, he came in as an atheist, and he was a big Irishman, big, gigantic guy. And when I say big, I mean like 6'9". He was the manager of the Harlem. He was one of the managers of the Harlem Globetrotters. Okay, which is a big basketball team. And he was a giant of a man. And he lived in Iowa. And he had resentments, real resentments, against a man that killed his father. Now, he was watching his father. He was looking through the window. His father went into the bar across the street. Two men went into the bar. They robbed the bar and killed his dad. They both were convicted. They went away to prison. It turns out in AA, he came in as an atheist. Some of you guys that have been around a while, you know who I'm talking about, Reverend Ed. He came in as an atheist. While being in AA, God showed up in his life, and he went to seminary and became a reverend. While he was preaching one day for a sermon on forgiveness, it got put upon his heart that he did not forgive these two men. Several years in AA, he died with 30-something years of sobriety. So he's maybe 12, 15, 16 years in AA, and he realized he still has a serious resentment on these two men that killed his father. That's a reasonable resentment, no? I mean, someone kills your parents, your dad. Isn't that a reasonable resentment? No. Well, the big book says that there is no justifiable anger. Because taking resentments and keeping resentments is just poison for our own system. So as he's preaching this, he realized he didn't forgive this person. And he starts praying for this person. And he starts asking God what to do for this person in his life. And somehow he comes up with the idea that not only has to forgive this person, but he has to go meet this person. And when the person gets out of jail, he has to give this person a place to live in his own home. See, he didn't just talk about forgiveness. He acted on forgiveness. I saw some people in here like mocking what he... This is a true story. This actually happened. He went to the prison. He met the guy. The guy had been in jail for so many years. He was African-American. He had been in jail for 22 years that when he was going to be released, he wasn't just going to go into... No one's like going to say, well, welcome. We're so happy to have you. Let me give you a job. The man's been in prison for 22 years. He was institutionalized. Nobody wanted to even give him a place to live. Reverend Ed showed up at 20-something years in Alcoholics Anonymous in front of the jail and said, you're going to come live with me and I'll help you get a job. And he lived with them for 5 years. That's what I'm talking about. There's program in AA, which is just staying sober, and there's a program in AA that talks about the fourth dimension of existence. That's the one I'm shooting for. Now, am I there yet? Of course not. However, when I go to the four-step inventory guide and I'm sitting in front of my sponsor, Jerry Bear, out in San Francisco, and I'm sitting there with him and I'm telling him about my sexual harms caused others, I really was not sexual harms caused others. It was more like I was bragging about some sex that I had in my life. And Jerry said, this is not a diary. I don't know what you're talking about. Maybe you misunderstood. I don't want to know about Nancy and Sue and the goat. This is not what I want to hear about. I want to hear about harms caused others. This is not a brag tale. This is not, oh, you tell me a story. Yeah, but you see what I did. Whoa, I was with the three of them. This is harms caused others. This is you getting this out of your life. This is you getting the yeast out of your life so that it doesn't grow into a product in your life where it overtakes you. How many of us in here know, maybe even have experienced in our own sobriety, something that should have been shared with our sponsor, and it grows in the dark, and it continues to grow, and then it becomes a working part of our sobriety, and it should have never been there in the first place. The fourth step is a wonderful place that we can write this down and then share it with our sponsor and get that out. It's a do-over. It's a start clean. It's, you know what? I have been living life the right way. You know what? Let me share this with you. I need to tell you what's going on. I need to sit down with you, another man, another woman, a sponsor. By the way, you know what else I love about the 12 and 12? Because it doesn't talk about it in the big book. Because in 4 years that they were writing the big book, that wasn't a popular word. It mentions sponsor all over the fourth step. I love that. I love that because that's what we have now today. Sponsors are our priests and our rabbis and our ministers in some of our lives. It's the guy that we go to say, hey, can I share this with you? Can I sit down with you and tell you what's going on? And if you don't trust your sponsor enough to be able to share with them what's on the four step, and I know this is not going to be a popular thing in here, but you know what? I hear people say, I don't trust my sponsor enough to share my four step with them. But you trust them enough to what? What do you trust them enough to do? What? To borrow money from them? If you can't share your four step with your sponsor, don't you think maybe you need to get another sponsor? I mean, I could share anything with my sponsor, and I have. Now, some of the times I don't like what he says after I've shared it, like when I was leaving from my fifth step that I'm going to share about with you next week, when I shared about it with him, and I didn't like what he said. But guess what? I have not surrounded myself with people in AA that tell me what I want to hear. If my support group is a rah-rah section for Stevie B, I need to get a new support group. And if all your friends are telling you how great you are, and they're not telling you that maybe you're not doing enough meetings, or maybe you shouldn't have shared this in a meeting, or maybe you need to look at this another way, you need to get yourself a bigger support group. Really, what you have is a fan club. And a fan club is never going to save your life. A fan club is Facebook stuff. What we're doing here is real life. I have people inside this room tonight that if I'm coming from ego, or if I'm talking too much about myself, or I'm doing stuff, they're going to let me know. If I stop going to meetings on a regular basis and I don't show up for a couple weeks in AA, I'm going to have a flurry of phone calls that say, what do you think, you're cured? They're not paying my salary, but you know what? My support group helps keep me alive. And I wouldn't have it any other way. And my sponsor is a person that I can trust. I have a new sponsor now. I have a new sponsor in the last couple weeks that I haven't really gotten to know very well. I'm going to meet with him tomorrow. But it's a person that I'm hoping is going to be someone local. Because I have a sponsor in Miami, and I have a sponsor in San Francisco, but I haven't had a sponsor recently locally. I have dear friends that I count on for feedback, but it's important to have that one man or that one woman in your life where you can say, listen, this is what's going on, and they could diagnose it fast enough and give you their feedback. I'm not saying it's always going to be right on. You know, sponsors do overstep their boundaries. I've overstepped my boundaries many, many times. Sometimes you're going to get a sponsee, as I have in Jerry, that's going to drive you crazy. But you know what? We work through it. We work through it. We get to the other side. And hopefully, as iron sharpens iron, it makes us better people. Last thing I want to share with you with the four step. There should be nothing in there that's scaring you from not doing this work. Nobody has ever done the perfect four step. Hello. I want you to hear that. Not Eddie, that's got 30-something years of sobriety, not even Bill W. We are works in progress. I said to a gentleman tonight that's in the middle of his four step, I said, why don't you come tonight? We're going to be talking about the four step. He said, I already heard your four step talk a couple years ago. This is a person that thinks that my four step talk is exactly the same as 2 years ago. If my four step talk is the same as 2 years ago, I haven't done any work in 2 years. If you're not growing, you're going. Our four-step talk should be totally different than it was 2 years ago. In 2 years, major things we've come to enlightenment. If you're still talking about the same stuff that you talked about 2 years ago, what program are you in? My stuff says that I have a daily reprieve that contingent upon on my spiritual condition today, that I'm doing my work today. And I have new stuff that I'm going to share with my new sponsor that has developed in the last couple of years that maybe I think is okay, but when the 12 and 12 says exactly this. When we do share this with our sponsor, that's where our sponsors are going to come in and say, you know what, that isn't okay. That's not okay. I remember that, I can't see the time for some reason. I remember that my first sobriety, I want to tell you, I want to share this with you. My first sobriety, I was on chemical enhancing medications for my muscles. Okay? Now, I want you to know the stuff that I was buying was legal in most countries, just not the United States. And so I felt it was in my best interest for my physical being, just in case I was in the flea market and someone would come by and say, would you like to be a fitness model, that I should be able to take these type of enhancements? And so I did. And I grew in AA, not emotionally, but physically. And I would take these enhancements, and my muscles would grow, and I didn't tell anybody. And when people would say to me, Steve, you know, it looks like that maybe you're on some type of enhancements, I didn't share it. Okay, and I didn't even share it with my sponsor. Because I knew that my sponsor would say, what? We don't do that in AA. We work on the insides in AA. So here I am growing in leaps and bounds, and I'm walking into meetings like this. You know, I'm walking like this. And my sponsor's like, you know, you're spending a lot of time working out and getting gigantic. And I'm like, well, it's emotional. You know, I always have an answer for everybody. It's emotional, physical, and spiritual, you know, Jerry. And he goes, well, you look like you're doing a lot of work in the physical. And why do I share that? It was a secret that I was keeping that if I didn't think it was bad, I would share it. Anything that I'm keeping inside that you can't share, it's a very good possibility that this is yeast in your life that needs to be removed. I'll see you next week for the fifth step.
Okay. Now watch that yeast. Huh? We're going to pass the baskets in accordance with the seventh tradition, which states that all groups are self-supporting. Buckets are here. Just pass them around. And I'll open up the floor if anybody wants to share.
Thanks, Jerry.
Alicia.
I'm a grateful member of the alcoholic addict, and I'm a blessed member of the group.